And so, of course, it's Revelation this Sunday. And this is part 48, would you believe? Revelation chapter 17, verses 3 to 9. Now, if you weren't with us last episode, we were introduced to the great prostitute who sits on many waters. And we note from later on in this chapter that she's identified with Babylon, the city of Babylon. And the idea of playing the harlot we saw in the Old Testament is mostly associated with Israel worshipping other gods. They were betrothed to the one true God, but they would worship others like a prostitute. For example, Hosea 9:1, "For you, Israel, have played the harlot against your God." That being the case, we have a problem because in chapter 18, verse 4, we read about the judgment on Babylon, and it says, "I heard another voice from heaven saying, 'Come out of her, my people,'" which suggests that some of God's people will play the harlot with the false god of Babylon. How can that be? I offered two possibilities last time. One was professing Christians, and we looked at the main four groups of Christianity and saw that some of them have already betrayed God's people and have turned towards the beast against them. And the other suggestion, I said, was perhaps nations with a Judeo-Christian background. And I think this passage this morning leans more towards that, but it could well be both. We saw that these purple nations are the countries that were predominantly Christian. The green ones in the middle were Christian, but they were conquered by Islam. But for all these Christian nations, very, very recently, almost all of them, all the dark green nations, including Australia, have betrayed God's people and recognised the non-existent state of Palestine, and with its ultimate aim of irrevocably dividing God's land. And according to the Bible, Joel chapter 3 verse 2, that's the last straw for God. When they divide his land, that means the nations of the world will be judged, and the epicentre of that battle will be right here in the valley of Jezreel, just near Tel Megiddo. Palestinians are a bit like Punch and Judy. Most people, not the Muppets that march up and down in Sydney and Melbourne and Brisbane and everything, but most thinking people recognise Hamas as a terrorist organisation. And they reject him as evil Mr. Punch. That's their logo, by the way, with the crossed swords. However, most of the world has been fooled into thinking that Judy, which is the Palestinian Authority, under the auspices of the rival political party, Fatah, are moderates and nice guys and really just want peace in the world. Fatah was co-founded by Yasser Arafat under the auspices of the PLO. Their logo, by the way, is crossed rifles with a hand grenade. There's a clue. Last episode, we saw that Hamas and Israel had agreed, at least in theory, to a 20-point peace agreement. And, you know, at the risk of plagiarising from the Apostle Paul, I said, I doubt it's going to work. I said that Hamas, based on their track record, will play for time. They'll stall, they'll whinge, they'll whine, they'll make up all sorts of excuses, and with a view to stretching it out as long as possible while they rearm and garner more sympathy from the Muppets. But on the 13th of this month, they did comply with step one, which was the prisoner exchange. They handed over 20 Israeli hostages in return for 1,968 Palestinian prisoners who were released from Israeli jails. Now, those prisoners, 250 of them, were serving life sentences for murder, some of them in terrorist offences. This man, where is he? Oh, there's our terrorists being released. This man, Mahmoud Abbas, is the head of the so-called Palestinian state. He's the head of Fatah. He is Judy. The world pays Judy a lot of money. Australia has budgets $32 million for them every year, taxpayers' money, and in the last 2 years have given over $130 million to Hamas through their various proxies. But be that as it may, what does he do with the financial aid? On release of these 250 prisoners, he gave them a total of $70 million as compensation for being in Israeli prisons. See, they have a thing called pay for slay. And in the Palestinian mindset, if you kill an Israeli, you will be paid for it. It doesn't even have to be an Israeli Jew, by the way. You can kill an Israeli Arab and still get money for it. If you die in the process, your family gets a pension. It is the equivalent of 8 times a school teacher's salary. This is what happens with a lot of the funds that Western nations around the world donate to them. As part of step one, they were required to hand over all 28 dead hostages. They said, oh no, that's too hard, we can't find them. Here's 4. Then they said, oh look, here's 4 more. And that was, you know, over the last 2 weeks, the last I heard, unless it's changed this morning, they'd handed over 15. The second step of the peace process was that Hamas was supposed to lay down their weapons. Instead of doing that, they fired a rocket-propelled grenade into an Israeli vehicle, killed these 2 young soldiers and wounded 3 of their comrades. This is from an interview with a senior Hamas official, Mohammed Nazal, just in the last week. He said, Hamas will never surrender its weapons. Hamas leaders will not leave Gaza. If Netanyahu decides not to leave the Gaza Strip, Hamas will come and drive him out. And he's just one of a number of senior Hamas officials that have said the same thing, while on the one hand they're saying, yes, we accept the truth, with the other hand they're saying, no, we don't. And by the way, this interview was on Al Jazeera. Al Jazeera is the major news network amongst the Arab nations. They're not exactly unbiased, okay? Now, if you want to send a reporter to Gaza, it's not going to happen. If you run a newspaper or a TV station, you have to use what they call stringers. And stringers are those people who go over there and get their news by talking to Al Jazeera correspondents. Would you believe not everything you get in the media from Al Jazeera is true? No, I know. I know. It's shocking, isn't it? Shocking. Instead of disarming, not only that, they are publicly executing any dissenters, those who hinted that they might be pleased to have an end to the war. Believe it or not, to this day, those who reject Hamas remain a minority in Gaza. The majority still support them because they've been indoctrinated over I don't know how many decades with the jihadi mentality. But notice this. This will surprise you. Bottom right corner. Don't know if you can read that. But this is from the ABC. Can you believe it? The ABC, oh, for our people who watch these things overseas, it's the Aussie equivalent of the BBC, all right? And I don't know what the BBC is like, but the ABC isn't exactly impartial in these matters. So I was absolutely amazed to see this reported by the ABC. That's how sensational it was. Of course, as you read the article, it goes on to say the blame must be laid fairly and squarely upon Israel and President Trump. And you can't argue with facts like that, can you? But at least they did put it in the paper. I hesitated to put this in a sermon. It's not really, forgive me, Lord, but someone sent me this yesterday. For those who listen outside, it's an old couple, and she's saying, he started believing things I knew weren't true. At first I thought it was Alzheimer's. Then I realised he was watching the ABC. And that's not really sermon material, but it amused me. So whatever happens in the future, we are living in interesting times. As we continue in chapter 17, it has more to say about Babylon and the prostitutes, so let us move on. We'll begin in verse 3 of chapter 17. He was the angel in the previous verse. He carried me away in the spirit. What does that mean? I don't know. I presume it means that John was physically still upon the island of Patmos, but somehow his consciousness was supernaturally taken somewhere else. This is the third time he's had this experience in Revelation. The first time was chapter 1, verse 1. I was in the spirit on the Lord's day. Christians say, oh, you mean Sunday? No, he means on the day of the Lord in the future, the day when our Lord returns, or the end of the age. Chapter 4, verse 2, he was taken in the spirit to the throne room of heaven, and now he's taken somewhere else. Paul had a similar experience, come to think of it, didn't he? In 2 Corinthians 12, speaking of himself, he says, I know a man in Christ who was caught up to the third heaven, whether in the body or out of the body. I don't know. God knows. So where does John go this time? He goes into a wilderness, which means a desolate place. Just hold that thought for a little while. Let's continue. I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet-coloured beast. The word coloured is superfluous in English, isn't it? And it's not there in the Greek. It says a scarlet beast. What colour is scarlet? Well, we know that that's red. And that's what the Greek word kokkinos means. Do you believe it comes from the word for a beetle? Because a berry was red. Supposedly so, it's berry coloured. Where does the word get cochineal from? A red food colouring from kokkinos. Yeah, there you go. Learn something every day. Where was I? So there's a picture of our scarlet-coloured beast. Any other identifying features? Why, yes, it's full of blasphemous names. There's one of its name tags, for example. It has seven heads, like that, and 10 horns, like that. Who is it? Who is this scarlet-coloured beast in the wilderness? Well, scholars are divided, as usual. Some say it's Satan. Most say it's the beast from the sea, which I think is the better explanation, to be honest. But let's look at the first one. There's the great red dragon, which is identified in the passage as being Satan from Revelation 12. So we're going to jump in Mr. Peabody's Wayback Machine. Am I dating myself? Anyone? You remember Mr. Peabody? Yeah, good. And we'll go back in time to chapter 12. Oops, I went too far. Another sign was seen in heaven, it says. In the heavens. So the original Satan was in the heavens, now the wilderness. Well, he could have moved, I suppose. A great red dragon. And this is why a minority of commentators say, well, this is clearly the same thing. One's scarlet, this one's red. They're both the same. Well, not necessarily. It's a different Greek word. This is the word poros. And poros means the colour of fire. Well, what colour is fire? Is it red? Well, can be. Fire engines are red, so it must be. It can be blue, it can be colourless, can't it? But generally speaking, I think of fire as being yellowy-orange sort of colour. So it's not necessarily the same colour as the one that John is seeing in chapter 17. What else? It has seven heads. Well, that's kind of new. No, that's not new. I'm going ahead of myself. Check. Seven heads, check. 10 horns, check. On his heads, seven crowns. That's new. That wasn't mentioned in the other one. Seven crowns on the heads. But no mention of blasphemous names. So, different location, different colour, and two out of the three identifying features. Now let's look at the sea beast, which I think is the correct explanation. For this, we need to go forward a little bit to chapter 13, still in the past from our perspective. Verse 1. Then I stood on the sand of the sea, I saw a beast coming up out of the sea. What colour was it? It doesn't tell us. So we don't know what colour it was. It goes on to say, having 10 horns, check, and 7 heads, check. On his horns were 10 crowns. So this is different. Satan has crowns on his 7 heads. This beastie has crowns on its 10 horns. Why the difference? I don't know. Seven's perfection completion, isn't it? Satan is a sense is complete within himself. 10 is the number of human responsibility. His beast that he empowers works through human beings. That's one explanation, perhaps. And on his heads, blasphemous names, check. So colour not mentioned, but three out of the three identifying features. And by the way, the next verse, just while we're here, describes what it looked like. Verse 2, the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear. His mouth like the mouth of a lion. And we know that this is an amalgamation of the vision that Daniel saw way back in the 6th century BC of the current and future beasts from his perspective, the empires that would rule over God's people. They were, of course, Babylon, Persia, Greece, and the final terrifying beast. So John's beef in Revelation 17 was like a leopard. There it is. That was Greece. A leopard had four heads. There's four heads. Then we had a feet like Persia. That's the bear. That's five heads. Feet like a bear, I should say. Got it back to front, didn't I? And a mouth like a lion. That's Babylon. There's six heads. And, of course, add the terrifying beast, and there's your seven-headed beast. The final terrifying empire will be an amalgamation of all of them. In its initial fulfillment, because prophecy is cyclical, most people say that the terrifying beast was Rome. I disagree, as you know, because it was supposed to conquer all the others and Rome never conquered Babylon. Rather, I say it was Islam, which followed Rome. Anyway, if you count the heads, there's your seven heads. Well, what about the 10 horns? Well, there they were in Daniel's vision on top of the terrifying beast's head. It's right at the end we see the 10 horns. Notice also there's a little horn there, if you can see it, but speaking blasphemous words, and it rises to great prominence and will tear three other horns be uprooted in its ascendancy. And we'll have to see what that is. So the beast is the geopolitical Islamic empire empowered by Satan. The prostitute is a treacherous church or Judeo-Christian nations betraying their heritage or both. Why is she riding the beast? Why not walking with it? Because in her arrogance, she naively believes that she can outsmart the beast for her own purposes. See, I spent a number of years training Arabs, and the technical, mechanical, academic stuff, they were clueless, to be honest. But they're not stupid people. They are highly intelligent people, just not in the ways that we think of as important. They have cunning that you and I could only aspire to, all right? They're very, very clever people in their own way. And they will allow you to think that you're dominating them, that you're controlling them, that you're manipulating them, when in fact the opposite is true. We think we're going to own the beast. Not so. Does the prostitute's stupidity pay off? Verse 4, the woman was dressed in purple and scarlet and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls. Yes. She's got money to burn, not just gold, but purple, of course. I think we saw this in the past, that to make one bucket of purple dye in ancient times took like 10,000 sea snails or something ridiculous. It was incredibly expensive, which is why it's still associated with royalty. That's where her wealth comes from. Prostitution. Ka-ching! She is selling her favours to the Islamic beast in return for money. And the beast is happy to pay for her services. Let's look at one small example, all right? Consider the little nation of Qatar. It's been in the news a bit lately, hasn't it? Qatar is a major sponsor of world terrorism while pretending to be moderate and reasonable, okay? It's only a tiny peninsula in the Persian Gulf. There it is there, just next to the even tinier island of Bahrain. The rest is all Saudi Arabia there, apart from a bit of Emirates at the right. Tiny place. But, like many an Arab nation, it is exceedingly abundantly wealthy through its oil. And what does Qatar, like other Muslim nations, do with its money? What does it spend its money on? Influence. Not influenza, that's different, right? Influence. Let's return to a snippet from last episode, where the woman is described in verses 1 and 2 as the great prostitute who sits on many waters with whom the kings of the earth have committed sexual immorality. Like what, you say? Well, how would you like a Boeing 747? Well, thank you very much. Or, yeah, let's make it great. But wait, there's more. If you think I'm being political, on the other side of the political divide, we have wokeism, don't we? What is wokeism? We know what it is. It's political correctness taken to an insane degree. Read an article the other day that intrigued me. Said that wokeism is just paganism revisited. and had 20 similarities. I didn't think all of them, some of them were stretched a bit, but I'd never looked at it in that light. But, you know, in paganism, you burn your babies, you kill your babies in order to get a good harvest or whatever. What we do now is we demand the right to murder our unborn babies because they're not all that convenient, quite frankly. You know? Oh, there are other things like in paganism, they blur gender lines in these gross and obscene sexual rituals that they do. We just have to teach it in school these days. Gone one ahead, sorry. There are other things, you know, they have to have their pagan festivals. Well, so we have to have, you know, Earth Day. We have to have jolly Gay Pride Week. We have to have Easter. Oh, did I say that out loud? Sorry. No, sorry, that's not a terribly pagan festival. And the list goes on. There are other things. They, you know, they have their own secret words. And now we have like 30-something pronouns, and I don't know what any of them mean. Now, these are the four leading top American universities as per the last assessment, which was just in the last couple of weeks. Clockwise from top left, they are Princeton, MIT, Harvard, and Stanford. They receive millions of dollars in grants from Qatar. Why would Qatar pay millions of dollars to top Western universities? And there's many more that get money from them. Because they promote wokeism. They're educating people to be woke. Now, MIT's a bit of an exception because in the last year or two, they've been pulling back from woke. And that's probably being the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. It's not really their bailiwick that much. But the others are full on woke, as are universities around the world, University of Sydney, you know, just promoting all this rubbish. Ka-ching. It's not their idea. Qatar didn't come up with this. They loathe the principles of woke. It's like when you see Queers for Palestine, you say, go over there. See how you like it over there. You know, your pronoun will be was. Lenin came up with the idea of 100 years ago. He said, if we want to destroy the West as communists, we must undermine their moral code. We must undermine their values. We've got to start with the family and work through that anything that's from the Bible to destroy them from the inside out. That's precisely what woke is doing to us, and we're so stupid we can't see it. Maria sent me a link to a YouTube video the other day, and I watched it yesterday morning. It was this chap, Moshe Cohen Aliyah. He's a professor of constitutional law, formerly in the United States, but he lives in Israel now. And he was talking about the deep state, which I thought sounded like conspiracy nonsense, you know. But he was saying that there are institutions in democracies these days who really don't care who the elected government is. They have their own agenda and they will promote it no matter what. Think of Sir Humphrey Appleby and Yes Minister, you know. Mm-hmm. Sir Humphrey and his boys were doing their thing, irrespective of what the elective government wants. And this is rife in the USA, promoting wokeism, and it's here as well. So, kings will play the harlot to get their money. What will happen to them? The rest of the verse, having in her hand a golden cup, which is the cup represents judgment, doesn't it? Full of abominations and the impurities of the sexual immorality of the earth. Ah, and on her forehead a name was written, Mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of prostitutes and of the abominations of the earth. These are either denominations or nations betraying their heritage. What's this bit mean? Mystery. I think we've seen this before. The English word comes straight from the Greek mysterion. Mysterion means something not previously disclosed but now revealed. Kind of like, you know, when Hercule Poirot uses the little grey cells and says it was in the drawing, you know, it was the butler in the conservatory with the candlesticks or whatever. That's the revelation of a mystery. So what is the mystery that's been kept secret until the last days? Well, let's see. Verse 6, I saw the woman, this is the prostitute, drunken with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Whoa. At least in part, the mystery is that this harlot is responsible for the death of those who are precious to the Lord. People and nations with a nominal association with Christ are sleeping with the Islamic beast who will kill God's people. And that's why it says, when I saw her, I wondered with great amazement. You imagine being the Apostle John in 96 AD? I mean, there he was in prison for his faith, or in exile anyway. And he had all these churches through Asia Minor that he was responsible for, doing his best to protect them and look after them and advise them. They were being horribly persecuted by the Romans, and a number of them were being horribly persecuted by the Jews as well. And to see this vision of the end time harlot, that's Christian people, in inverted commas, seeing God's people killed and sleeping with the enemy. No wonder he was amazed. Who could have thunk it 2,000 years ago? We get a little bit more from what follows. Verse 7, the angel said to me, why do you wonder? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which has the 7 heads and the 10 horns. Now this is, the verse continues, the beast that you saw. He says, I'll tell you the mystery of the woman and the beast. But he's not talking about the woman now. He's gone back to the beast. The beast that you saw was and is not and is about to come up out of the abyss and go into destruction. Significant words in this verse, was, is not, and is about to come up. This is saying the final terrifying beast empire will be an empire that has existed in the past, went away, and makes a comeback in the last days. Let's continue. Those who dwell on the earth and whose names are not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world. Who are they? Who are those whose names are not written in the Lamb's book of life? Now, you ask a Christian, they'll say, well, that's the unsaved. Not exactly. If you've been in this church for a little while, we know that there were actually 3 books in ancient belief, and this book of Revelation confirms that a few chapters later on. There were 3 books, 3 heavenly books, whether they're literal or not, I doubt, but, you know, there's the book of life or the book of the living. These are those whose names are written as who are saved from the foundation of the world, from God's perspective anyway. Then you have the book of the dead. That is those who are beyond redemption. Most Christians say, oh, nobody's beyond redemption. Yes, they are. Pharaoh was. And so are the likes of Hitler and Idi Amin and Stalin and Yahya Sinwar and Uncle Tom Cobley and all. Then you have, which is perhaps the biggest book, the book of the undecided. These could go either way, couldn't they? Now, in Jewish practice, this was repeated every year at Yom Kippur. You got another chance. It started again. All right? But it won't in the last day. The thing is that the previous verse groups these two books together. Those whose names are not written in the book of life are the dead and the undecided. And it's not going to go well for them. Why? Why are they grouped together? Because the fourth horseman has ridden. And the first horseman of the apocalypse, which is among us now, was deception. And deception is at work now, and it's getting to the point where people will not be able to choose Christ. The day will come when it's too late. You're either saved or lost, without a choice. I know that sounds awful, but that's what the scriptures teach. By the way, what's wrong with this picture? Horseman doesn't have an arrow, does it? That's why it's deception. He has a bow. Doesn't mention any arrows. It's not a weapon. It's a con. So let's get rid of that arrow and replace it with a sausage. Sausages are harmless, depending on what ingredients are in them, I suppose. Anyway, what will those who are not written in the book of life, the undecided and the dead, what will happen? They will marvel when they see the beast that was and is not and shall be present. They'll be impressed by it. They'll be amazed. They'll be completely taken in by it. Time's running out. What's next? Here is the mind that has wisdom. The 7 heads are 7 mountains on which the woman sits. Well, that's a no-brainer. Everyone knows that's Rome. Rome's the city on 7 hills, right? Just 2 tiny little problems with that. One, it doesn't say hills. The word for mountains is oros. The word for hill is bunos. These are mountains. Not only that, but according to Wikipedia, which is the source of all truth, everyone knows that. For what it's worth, it claims there are 100 cities worldwide founded on seven hills, would you believe? It said that two of them here in Oz, one was Brisbane and one was Melbourne. News to me, but that's what Wikipedia says. Do with that what you want. But not only that, and the main thing is this is Jewish apocalyptic literature, isn't it? And mountains are symbols. And what are symbols? What do mountains symbolise in Jewish apocalyptic? Good question. Well asked. We'll refresh our minds on that next time. So what can we take away from today? Number one, Christian nations and denominations will sell themselves to the beast. In return, they will unwittingly do the beast's bidding because the beast is smarter than they think, even though that results in the death of Christ's people. In the last days, it will be too late for the undecided. So, if you haven't decided, if there's anyone here who hasn't decided, get it sorted, guys. Time's running out.